this is a complete short story called Cheap Night Out. Having spent much of my life rooting out the corrupting influence of art from within the sphere of popular culture, it has been heartening to witness the sudden rise of the tribute band. While Grail Marcus wants to treat punk rock as high art, his intellectual posturing looks ludicrous when contrasted with the antics of the Scottish Sex Pistols. The high-pitched stance of tribute bands undermines every effort to insert the songs they cover into the discourse of serious culture. Likewise, for the best part of a decade, I've been sickened by the way in which industrial rock has been used to bridge the divide between pop and art. Recently, I became convinced that the best way of dealing with this baneful situation was to form an industrial tribute band called the Australian White House. No one in the group actually hails from down under, although we all admire the tough-minded Aussie attitude towards art. White House have long attempted to project themselves as the most extreme industrial band, although on the handful of occasions when I've met frontman William Bennett, he's always struck me as being extraordinarily polite. Having secured a gay bar in Chinatown for the debut of the band, I was prowling Dean Street prior to the gig when I ran into the utterly talentless writer and filmmaker Henry Kawipi. The bullshitter of suburbia, as Kawipi is known among his chums, was with his girlfriend Sharon McClott, a film editor at the notoriously crusty publishers Crumb and Crud Limited. Upon clocking me, Kawipi pressed himself against a wall and manoeuvred McClott so that she was standing between us. "I know you're a fascist, but please don't hit me. Here, take my wallet," the bullshitter of suburbia whined as I approached him. "Cheers," I said, taking the money. "Your short hair really frightens me. I hate Nazis," Kawipi wailed. "I'm not a fucking Nazi," I exclaimed, as I pushed McClot aside and grabbed the bozo by the throat. "Don't kill me," Kawipi pleaded. "I'm a friend of Solomon Thursday, the author who had a papal bull issued against him after the Catholic hierarchy realised his novel, The Lucifer Couplets, was a great work of art. Thursday is tight with Special Branch, and if you hurt me, then he'll send them after you. The Mounties always get their man." "The Mounties are Canadian, you fucking moron," I spat at Kawipi. "Are they really?" the idiot sobbed. "I didn't know that." "Wow," McClot exclaimed, "an intelligent prole. I've met your kind before. At Crumb and Crud, we signed up a dosser called John Harry. His book did very well, but we had to drop him after he assaulted an editor. I think you're very interesting. Let's go for a drink." "Okay, but I choose the venue," I shot back. "I'm Sharon McClot," the notoriously dim-witted editor informed me. "I'm Luther Blissett," I hissed. "I'm a film editor at Crumb and Crud," McClot gushed. "It's a very important job. I commission books about the cinema. Mind you, I won't have anything to do with filth or rubbish. I don't like directors like John Walnut, the pervert who made Punk Flamingos." "You mean John Waters," I corrected. "Oh," McClot sighed, "it doesn't matter. Anyway, I only appreciate great works of art. I really like, I've forgotten his name, but you'll know his work. He directed Close Encounters." As she waffled, I led the Crumb and Crud bimbo into the venue hosting the first public performance of the Australian White House. Kawipi trotted along behind us, convinced that his girlfriend was going to treat him to the spectacle of fucking another man while he watched. McClot ordered 2 pints of lager and a bowl of water for the bullshitter, which he drank on his hands and knees. Unfortunately, this hack was so desperate to impress me that he was unable to stick to his submissive role. "You see," Kawipi ranted, "I've just been editing the Fabergé Book of Pop, and someone suggested that I include a story by K.L. Callan. I made it plain that I'd do no such thing. Callan has short hair and doesn't like my friend Solomon Thursday, so it's obvious he's a fascist. Callan," I said as I punched the bullshitter on the nose, "is a well-known revolutionary. He's not a fascist. Did you know I went to school with Billy Idol?" Kawipi boasted lamely, taking heed of my hint to change the subject. The venue was beginning to fill, and it was easy to persuade McClot and the bullshitter to get on stage with me. I had 2 assistants with a turntable who spun Hungry for Pain, while through the PA I ordered my literary companions to get naked and crawl around my feet. I bellowed the odd obscenity into the microphone, but put a lot more effort into kicking McClot and her boyfriend, both of whom greatly enjoyed the punishment. "Right to kill," some arsehole shouted from the audience. "We're the Australian White House," I explained. "We don't do right to kill. We've no truck with liberal rubbish about rights. If we want to kill someone, we just do it." Besides, you must be familiar with Bordiger's left communist critique of democracy. Only liberal do-gooders have any time for wishy-washy platitudes about human rights. But I thought you were a tribute band, the imbecile mewed. I whacked the twat over the head with my mic stand and that shut him up. In fact, it knocked him unconscious. As my assistant spun, I'm coming up your ass. I ordered the bullshitter to give his girlfriend the rear entry treatment. I kicked the upper class twits about a bit more and bellowed several dozen obscenities. Halfway through the song, a member of the audience leapt on stage and shot the two literary masochists at point blank range. Then the rogue announced that he was the British Son of Sam before proceeding to masturbate into McClot's mouth. As the song ground to a halt, the mass murder groupie ran from the club and into the street. He was a hard act to follow, and although my cock's on fire was next on the set list, I decided death penalty would be more appropriate, so we went with that.